Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Joe Cassiope from Frederickson and Byron, and with me here today is my colleague, Brian McCool. We represent the appellant in this matter, AIM Development USA, LLC. If there's a unifying theme among all of the landfill cases that the parties have cited, it's that municipalities, even if they approve a landfill in the first instance, eventually decide that they no longer want a landfill within their jurisdiction, and then go to often very great lengths to regulate those landfills out of existence. Despite that lack of appreciation by municipalities, we still have waste that we need to dispose of. And the owners of a landfill, like the owners of any other property in Minnesota, have both statutory and constitutional rights to maintain use even after it becomes nonconforming, and to continue operating a landfill as a nonconforming use. AIM is here today to vindicate its constitutional and statutory right to continue operating its non-hazardous industrial waste storage and disposal facility in the city of Sartell. The district court erred here by adopting the city of Sartell's exceedingly narrow view of what constituted AIM's nonconforming use, and in doing so, limited AIM to utilizing the landfill to deposit only a narrow subset of non-hazardous industrial waste, further limiting the source of that waste to a single source, the now destroyed Verso paper mill.
Factually, do we agree that that's what the landfill was used for before AIM acquired it?
There is no dispute that the only source of waste into the landfill prior to the destruction of the paper mill,
so from the paper.
From when it opened in 1987 through the fire in 2012, was from the paper mill.
And wasn't that what each of the permits said, that it was from the Verso and its predecessors? It was those companies that were allowed to deposit the waste from that paper mill into that landfill?
No, not the only permit that actually matters, which is the 1984 permit for the purposes of determining the nonconforming use. And so
I'm going to ask this question to both of you, but you raised two issues. The second issue being that the district court erred when it concluded that there were fact issues remaining. I think you both agree on that. That there aren't fact issues remaining, but if we were to affirm the district court on the first issue, would there be a trial for which there would be fact issues that remain?
So if this court were to affirm the district court's opinion across the board, right, so and impose the exact same limitations on source, type, and volume of use, no, there would not be a trial because the paper mill does not exist anymore, and so that can no longer be a source.
So then my other question to both of you is, do you think this is a case that should be published? And if so, what would the syllabus point be?
This case should be published. I think it's important on a number of points. The first of which is this case, so the district court really, in its opinion, setting aside the fact issue piece, really looked at four issues, which was source of waste, type of waste, volume of waste, and then the footprint of the landfill. And so as to each of those, the court, the syllabus, I believe, would need to address each of those. As to the source of waste, the syllabus would state that for land use purposes, setting aside MPCA permitting purposes, for land use purposes, who uses a property or where the materials are originate from that are used on that property is irrelevant for land use purposes. As far as on the
That's your truck analogy.
That's the truck analogy, right? That's the if a landfill solely receives consumer waste from the city of Bloomington prior to becoming a nonconforming use, doesn't mean that when it becomes a nonconforming use, you can't accept consumer waste from Eden Prairie or elsewhere. And that's really consistent with case law from across the country, and the Hawkins and Northwest Residence decisions from Minnesota. In Hawkins, the municipality, that Hawkins is the decision dealing with the expanding use and whether a gravel bed can be used, only the small portion that actually had been utilized when the use became nonconforming, or a greater portion of the property.
Here, but the source and the type are kind of intertwined, aren't they?
They can be intertwined, and the district court certainly determined that they were intertwined, and that's why I want to go back to that 1984 permit, to the 1984 permit and to the city's ordinance that was in application when the use became nonconforming, because neither that 1984 permit nor the applicable ordinance from the city of Sartell make any sort of differentiation as to the source of the waste. The permit does have a provision on the type of waste, but they are not related, and ultimately a party from the perspective of type, a party can make modifications to how it's using property as long as you don't change the overall use. But first, I do agree we need to look at what is the use, because that's what's relevant. The court in Hawkinson said, for purposes of determining what the use is, we look at how the property was being used at the time that the use became nonconforming. And specifically, what that means here is we need to look at what AIM was doing as defined by what it was allowed to do by the MPCA in the city. I think of this almost as a zoom lens on a camera, right? So AIM was operating a non-hazardous industrial storage and disposal facility. That's how it was defined in the ordinance, and that's how it was defined in the permit.
So for you, the two pertinent dates are 1984 and 1989.
I would say it's 1989 is the pertinent date. I mentioned 1984 because 1984 was the date where both the permit and the ordinance were put into place. This is a unique situation where the ordinance was specifically created for this exact use. And so we can look right at the ordinance to define what the use is. And what the ordinance states is that this the allowed use for the landfill site is a, quote, industrial storage and disposal facility, a facility permitted by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency or its regulatory successor for the disposal of non-hazardous and non-toxic industrial waste. And then similarly, if we look at the permit, the 1984 MPCA permit explained that, quote, the disposal facility authorized by this permit is a 70-acre industrial waste landfill, close quote. And then the permit goes on to say that that it authorized the deposit of non-hazardous industrial waste. And if you look at both the permit and the ordinance, there's nothing in either that restricted the volume of material that could go into the site. There's nothing in either that restricted the source of the material.
Are you looking at Chapter 13, Nonconforming Uses, that part of the ordinance?
I am. It is the specific ordinance at the time. I direct the court to Exhibit DD to the August 18th, 2017 declaration of Jonathan Baker in the record. I'm not sure how it was specifically moved, but that is the actual written ordinance signed by the city where they enacted the ordinance for the specific landfill. So that's where I would direct the court.
Thank you.
The only limitation that existed in either the permit or the ordinance at the time this use became nonconforming was a provision in the permit that said there is a list, and unfortunately we don't have the list, there's a list of specific non-hazardous waste that can go into this landfill. But even then, the MPCA, the director of the MPCA, had the discretion to change the items on that list without any input from the city. And so what that means is, as a matter of land use, the use that existed when it became nonconforming was not the very zoomed-in specific use that the city argues here, a boiler ash disposal waste site that can only bring in 5,000 cubic yards per year, sourced solely from the Verso paper mill. As a matter of land use law, The use is an industrial storage waste facility, and the best evidence of that is the permit itself as well as the ordinance.
So is that, to get back to Judge Riley's question, is that your syllabus point?
That's my syllabus point on both the type and the source. I want to go now quickly to the volume, which I think that we can address very quickly. And on volume, the court made both a legal and a factual error. On volume, the intensity of use on a site is not a relevant characteristic for purposes of land use law. And I direct the court to the Township of Charters case, which is from Pennsylvania. It's a landfill case directly on point. Rejected that argument directly. And then also the Northwest Residence case from the Minnesota Court of Appeals, which held that the fact that a proposed group home for the mentally ill would house more people than currently reside there with corresponding increased intensity of use, quote, does not support a conclusion that the home would be an expansion of a nonconforming use. So the court was wrong in the law there. It was also wrong in the facts. And I say that because while the court was correct that in 1 year, 2007, that there was only 5,000 cubic yards of waste deposited, that was only a snapshot. 4 years later, it was nearly 9,000 cubic yards. And if you go 10 years earlier, it was 47,000. And so volume doesn't matter as a matter of law, but even if this court were to determine that volume or intensity of use could matter, 5,000 isn't the right number, and it really should be based on what the maximum use was during that applicable time period.
But once again, if we were to agree with the district court with regard to the source and type,
yes,
we don't need to get to volume.
That's correct. That's correct. The one other piece that I do want to the reason why type and source are different and do matter is that one outcome here that the court could decide is that, well, yeah, under the case law, source doesn't matter. This captive landfill theory that the city adopted from the unpublished Court of Appeals case doesn't matter. If you look at kind of across the waterfront of cases in Minnesota nationwide, there isn't any other case like that. And in fact, the city has an ordinance that deals with ancillary uses and could have made this landfill an ancillary use to the paper mill, but it didn't do that. So the court should reject that after the fact. The reason why type and source matter is the court could determine, yeah, we're not going to restrict it by source, but we do think that we need to restrict it by type. Well, what that would allow AIM to do is to deposit waste from paper mills, just not from the Verso paper mill.
AIM would really be to your example of what's the name on the door.
Exactly. Same type of waste. But just not the source.
Not because
source
from that specific plant.
That's correct. I'll save kind of my last point for rebuttal, but briefly on this discontinuance or abandonment. The district court found that there were genuine issues of material fact, and as Judge Riley noted, we both disagree with that, although on the other sides of it. The city's view is really an extreme one, and what the city has said is the only way that you can continue a non-conforming use at a landfill is to put new waste into the landfill. And the city, even the 30.02F represented from the city, used that example of the tin can full of waste. If you bring a tin can full of waste into the facility, you continue it. What the undisputed record established at the district court, and in fact, if you look at that unpublished Ohio Court of Appeals case, the aluminum smelting, it actually deals with this issue head-on, favorable for us, is that putting new waste into a landfill is not the only way you can continue using a landfill. You continue using a landfill by maintaining the waste already there. You continue using a landfill by putting up security measures, by...
How do you respond to the city's argument that a landfill owner has to do that by way of regulation or violate the law?
The landfill owner has to take those other activities by way of the law. If anything, that supports our position rather than the city's, because the MPCA's regulations and the requirements set forth right in the landfill describe the use. And so if you look at the MPCA regulations, and this is in the 2013, Ames 2013 permit, it actually defines what it means to operate a landfill. And it includes items like, I see I'm out of time, if I could very briefly
finish
the
point. You go ahead and continue your answer.
It includes items like storing all the solid waste in accordance with MPCA regulations, preventing unauthorized entry, training personnel, maintaining and operating a stormwater management system. But what is conspicuously absent from the requirements under the MPCA rules is actually putting new waste into the landfill. And for that reason, the Ames activities as a matter of law, and there's no genuine issue of material fact on this point, constituted continuing the nonconforming use.
And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondent?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is John Baker of the Green Espel Firm, and I represent the city of Sartell in this case. First, to directly go to Judge Riley's question about whether there's any scenario in which a fact question would exist. At the end of a worst case scenario for the city, there is, and let me explain why. If the court finds that a continuation of a prior lawful use includes landfilling of construction demolition waste generated on the property, and that Ames' intent is relevant to the discontinuance question, then a trial is necessary because Ames does not have its story straight in the historical records about what its intent was in the relevant period of time. When it wanted to get out from under MPCA regulations with regard to cleanup, they say, well, we're not going to reopen this. We don't have any intent to reopen it. The landfill's closed. We don't need to do these things. But yet, and they also said that to the county for tax purposes. But yet for this case, they're claiming that their intent was always to have it used as a landfill. So in that narrow circumstance, there would be a fact question. This
syllabus points be.
Yes. Let me, three things. First, it's not a continuation of Verso's prior use, because what Verso Paper did with its own paper mill waste 5 years ago doesn't give AIM a statutory right to start burying dozens of different kinds of industrial waste generated by anyone. Second syllabus point, AIM's failure to do anything on the site except caretaking for more than 5 years constitutes a discontinuance of the prior use within the meaning of the Minnesota statute. Third syllabus point, AIM lacks the right to expand the horizontal footprint of the waste disposal area on the site because that would constitute an expansion.
And 23 to the 70.
Yes. Or the actual number of the acres isn't what is significant, and because the number that is used to refer to the waste disposal area and varies depending upon which document generated by the plaintiffs you look at. The important thing is they are proposing to the MPCA to deposit waste on an area that is just dirt and turf and air. It does not have, according to their own records, the leachate recirculation system. It does not have the liner. So it is not an area where landfilling had ever occurred there before. One final point, and frankly, let me quote former Justice and Judge Harry McLaughlin on this, because this is what the Minnesota Supreme Court said in the Freeborn County versus City of Clawson case. They were entitled to continue their present nonconforming use in the same manner and to the same extent that it was operated at the time the zoning ordinance went into effect. So this is not contrary to their theme about a city getting rid of a landfill because it doesn't like it. This isn't a prior nonconforming use case. In other words, it's really a nonconforming potential use case. And that the quote from that is 203 Northwest 2nd, 323 at 327. We've cited Clausen for a number of things, but we haven't quoted that. Let me first go to the question of continuance. AIM brought this case so that it can begin to accept waste from customers for disposal on the parcel, even though that's not a permitted or a conditional use in the light industrial zoning district. There's a lot of things they can do on the property consistent with a light industrial zoning district, and if they don't like that, they can seek and potentially obtain an amendment to that. But nevertheless, this case is about whether they can completely ignore the city zoning ordinance, whether they can completely ignore the processes for seeking city permission, and essentially treat the zoning ordinance and the zoning laws like they're irrelevant. There are several flaws with AIM's argument with regard to continuance that are flawed. AIM isn't seeking to continue the prior nonconformity of its predecessor, Verso Paper, so this case falls outside of the actual text of the statute they're relying on. The relevant prior nonconformity that occurred on the site was the disposal of certain kinds of specified kinds of industrial waste generated by Verso Paper, despite the fact that the waste disposal had not been listed as either a permitted or a conditional use in that district since 1989. And it's interesting listening to plaintiffs' arguments on this, because as they acknowledge, there's no dispute that during the entire relevant time, even what they say is the relevant time, in 1984 or 1989, they were never depositing anything other than paper mill waste there. And no one was ever depositing any waste generated by any entity other than the property owner itself. Instead, they say, well, look at this language and this ordinance or that language. That doesn't describe what they were actually doing, and whether or not the use was established for nonconforming use purposes depends on what they were doing. They can't create the facade of doing things because possibly it would have been consistent if Verso had done it, even though they weren't. They've admitted they weren't. So the detours through the city's zoning ordinance and the detour through some of the language, but not all of the language, reading out the limiting language in the definition of industrial and disposal area. The real language, if the court wants to follow that line of authority, I would urge the court to look at the actual definition of what they're talking about on page 16 of the city zoning ordinance, which is Hoffman Deposition Exhibit 14, because there is a definition of industrial waste that is much narrower and does not include construction and demolition waste.
What do you do with Ames' argument that ultimately it's the MPCA's prerogative to determine the specific types of non-hazardous industrial material that AIM would be allowed under the MPCA to deposit in that landfill?
Contrary to AIM's argument, those decisions are not solely entrusted to the authority of the MPCA. The MPCA's role involves making sure that the conditions for the issuance of state permits set forth in state regulations and state statutes are imposed and complied with. The MPCA has no role, and they don't want to have any role, in interpreting and applying the Municipal Planning Act's nonconforming use provisions, which is what AIM seeks a declaratory judgment regarding. Put another way, AIM has made the types of waste that it plans to attract the city's business. It did so by refusing to seek any local land use approvals based on the premise that the proposed operation under the Municipal Planning Act would simply be a continuance of the prior lawful nonconforming use and would not expand it. So they can't sue the city and can't ask the court for that declaration and at the same time say, with regard to looking at what did and did not happen and the legal significance for purposes of the word continuance and the word nonconformity, you can't pay attention to the type of the use because that's the MPCA's business. The difference between what Verso did and what AIM plans to do pushes the word continue way past the breaking point. As they've acknowledged, Verso Paper was simply taking care of part of its own waste on its own property. By contrast, AIM wants to take money under a completely different business model from anyone for the disposal of anyone's construction, demolition waste, and a bunch of other kinds of industrial waste on the site. When you change the nature of the use, you can't claim to be continuing the prior use, particularly where you cease to do so, to quote from Freeburn County, in the same manner and to the same extent. This aluminum smelting case is cited because it is so close in so many respects to what's going on here. Yes, it's an Ohio decision. Yes, it's unpublished, but nevertheless, if you want to see a prior appellate court that was struggling with so many of these issues in a similar legal context and factual context, it's persuasive authority. Now, what AIM has tried to do is to find one thread that's common to both the prior use and the potential use, and then cry continuation. That one common thread approach isn't rooted in any case from Minnesota or in any case from outside of Minnesota involving waste disposal, including the ones that they cited here this morning. With regard to discontinuance, even if the court disagrees with us on the continuation question, it has no right to accept waste for disposal on the parcel, and that's because of the discontinuance exceptions in the statute that AIM invokes, which are also in the city's ordinance. AIM admittedly hasn't deposited any waste on the parcel, and it's been more than 5 years since they bought it. And under Section 1 of the controlling case in Minnesota, the County of Isani versus Peterson in 1991, whether there's been a discontinuance doesn't depend on intent. Now, our red brief goes section by section through the Peterson decision to make it clear that to prove discontinuance under that decision, intent and abandonment aren't part of the analysis. That's on pages 46 to 48 of that brief. Now, AIM has also argued that old Verso paper waste in the ground plus the caretaking that happens above the ground because AIM owns property that includes solid waste means that AIM has always been operating a landfill there for the purpose of discontinuance. Now, there's a lot of things wrong with that, but to go back to statutory interpretation again, they twist the most important noun in the Minnesota statute, nonconformity. The statute provides limited protection of a right to continue a nonconformity except where the nonconformity or occupancy is discontinued for a period of more than 1 year. But here, what little has happened on the property for the past 5 years has not included a nonconformity. The city zoning ordinance does not make it illegal to have old waste in the ground in a light industrial district. The zoning ordinance does not make it illegal to comply with MPCA's maintenance and monitoring and reporting and other requirements in a light industrial district. The relevant nonconformity that occurred on the site was the disposal of certain specified kinds of industrial waste on the site. That's why what AIM plans to do would be the start of a new nonconformity rather than a continuation of it. So let me go to the question of expansion. There's no dispute that AIM's plan, as reflected in their 2014 application to the MPCA, is to begin to deposit waste in areas on the parcel where waste has never been deposited before. To all of this, they say, well, this doesn't constitute an expansion. They don't get that interpretation from the statute that they invoke. Instead, they look for two other places. One, the mining case from Minnesota from the 1950s called Hawkins versus Talbot. And second, what's called the natural expansion doctrine, which has worked in landfill cases in only two of the 50 states, Pennsylvania and New York. The Hawkins case construed the village's ordinance to enable the answered in a mining operation to follow the vein of the material without losing the common law nonconforming use statistic. It considered the mineral to be a diminishing asset, but no court in Minnesota has held that the things in the proposed expansion site. Air and dirt are assets for purposes of this doctrine, because if you did that, it would devour the exception. Keep in mind, this is a statutory word. The word expansion is now in the statute, which wasn't true back when the Hawkins case came out. And that means there's no longer an ability in Minnesota for a property owner to bypass the statutory language and fall back on an expansive reading of Hawkins rather than a plain reading of the statute.
I was a little confused by your brief when you started quoting Ron Abrams when he was in the legislature. Sure. So if we're looking at what the legislature was looking at and intending, are you saying that the statute is ambiguous?
I'm not, Your Honor. What their argument essentially says, for this category of cases that should include landfill, what everybody, including they and their consultants, have described in their documents as an expansion isn't an expansion. It is, as they're essentially in that respect, seeking a judicial rewriting of the statute to remove the word expansion. If the legislature wants to say for certain special interest groups, expansion shouldn't apply to you. It should apply to the four-car garage. It should apply to the circumstances mentioned by Representative Abrams. But we don't want that to apply to landfills. They need to go to the legislature now and get them to amend the statute. They just can't simply say, we want a court to read it out by broadening almost mindlessly the scope of what the court said in Hawkins. So I see that, and unless the court has further questions, we would urge the court to affirm the judgment.
It appears we have none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish to use that time.
I'm going to address the footprint, but before I get there, I want to make one last point on the type of waste and why that does not matter from a land use standpoint. Specifically, all of the city's arguments are premised on its view of what the nonconforming use was. And it takes what would be in Minnesota the strictest and most narrow view of what the nonconforming use is. For purpose, and why I started my argument by saying the first thing we need to do is define the nonconforming use, and here are the sources we look at, is because a party on one extreme, like the city, could say, well, the nonconforming use was a boiler ash landfill solely from the Verso paper mill that only can accept 5,000 annual cubic yards of waste. On the other end, a party could say, well, this was a landfill, so it can accept any type of waste, whether it be composting waste or it could be a waste transfer station. And to find the middle ground, to find what the use actually is, we need to look at the evidence from 1984 and 1989, and those are the original permit and what that authorized, as well as the ordinance and what that authorized. And both of those sources make very clear that the use that became nonconforming, and therefore the nonconforming use, was as an industrial storage and disposal facility. Why that matters from type standpoint, I'll use an analogy, and this is borrowed from the City of Jewell case from the Supreme Court of Iowa with a minor modification. What the court explained there, when a party made a similar argument to the city, was that if you have a warehouse that stores food, and at the time of the use becomes nonconforming, it is only storing seafood products, it does not become a change. It does not become an expansion of use if 10 years later it switches to housing poultry products. It's still a food storage warehouse. The exact same thing is true here. This is a industrial storage and disposal facility, and so the specific type of industrial non-hazardous waste that's deposited in the facility doesn't matter, just as the source doesn't matter. With respect to the footprint, the district court correctly and consistent with the only two other cases that have ever analyzed the issue and reached a holding, the Court of Appeals in New York in the Jones v. Town of Carroll decision, and the Charters decision from Pennsylvania determined that a landfill is just like a quarry, a landfill is just like a gravel bed, a landfill is just like a mine. It used the identical analysis that the Supreme Court used in Hawkins to determine that a landfill is a diminishing asset. Specifically that with every once a use becomes nonconforming, every new truck of waste that is deposited in a landfill is an expansion of that use. And so if the court were to determine that anything new deposited in the landfill would be an expansion, then as soon as a landfill would become nonconforming, it couldn't be used anymore. And for that reason, the only two cases, while counsel for the city says it's only been adopted in two states, only two states have looked at it, and they both have come out the way that the district court came out here. I do want to clarify the scope of what we're talking about here, because there is some confusion into the record as to, are we talking about a 186-acre parcel, are we talking about a 70-acre parcel, or something smaller. The source I'd refer the court to is the 2013 permit, which is Exhibit 13 to Exhibit A to the Declaration of our John Baker, not to be confused with the city's John Baker. And what that explains is that it's a 70-acre facility set aside for landfilling, but within that facility, there's only 27 acres that that AIM or its predecessors ever had any intent to conduct landfilling operations on. Currently, there's cell one and cell two, that's approximately 14 acres, but what the district court's ruling would permit us to do, if this court reversed the other aspects of the district court's ruling, is to use the other two cells that from the outset, from 1984, AIM and its predecessors always intended to use for purposes of
this lawsuit. Which are within the 23-acre?
Which are within the 27 acres.
27.
Within the 27 acres. So
not the 70.
Correct. The entire area of the ground where waste will be stored, if the court grants the relief we've requested, is 27 acres. Two cells where there's waste currently and two cells where there's no waste, but it's always been the intent of AIM and its predecessors to deposit waste there. We respectfully request, unless the court has any questions, that the court affirm on that ground and reverse the district court on all other grounds.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. We thank counsel for your briefing and argument. We'll issue our decision within 90 days.